Chiltis with you, the voice of the Chiefs, along with the 15-year long snapper, Pro Bowl long snapper, revolutionized the game, Kendall Gammon. Okay, OTAs have gone on throughout the spring. Now, as we kind of segue into the summer, this becomes the last week of work for the football team and the coaches, basically, before they scatter and come back for training camp in St. Joe. OTAs, mandatory minicamp, some people say, well, it's hard to tell the difference. What about mandatory minicamp this week, and what do you get done?
Well, you naturally, the pace quickens just a little bit, even though you're trying to go hard all the time. It's minicamp. I mean, OTAs, there's a little bit different feel to it. You're installing everything offensively and defensively. You're doing it in a little slower pace. Now you're going to start back over and reinstall that same stuff, review that same stuff over a 2.5-day period. So you've got it there. Then when you go to camp in St. Joe, you'll start over again and install it very quickly as well. Now you've seen it two, three times, and Coach Reed talked about it, and we'll see that in a little bit in terms of once you see it a couple different times, now maybe different things sink in. That's what you're looking for. Now, with all the new rules safety-wise, which are very good, you can't hit in practice. You can't do things like you used to do, no one-on-ones, things of that nature. But you can see how people move. You can see how they flip their hips. You can see how they run. It has a purpose. But, again, until you get them live on the football field, you really can't make some judgments.
I want to ask you about this because the game has changed some. It used to be in days of training camp, here's your playbook and study it and figure it out. We're going to put everything in. Now you get your iPad of your playbook essentially in March. These guys have received an avalanche of information on both sides of the ball. I'm going to give it all three phases where they have swarmed these guys right with info. What about processing it? And when I say processing it, translating it to the field and being able to execute.
Well, you know what, the big thing in the NFL, and I found this to be true in my career, even though I was a career backup, nothing takes the place of getting in there and doing it live and having to react in 5 or 6 seconds to survey the defense and see what's going on from an offensive side of point of view, or defense vice versa. But it's those reps, getting in there. I remember my second and my third year going up as a center on regular offense, and now I'm identifying things. The fact that I had more and more reps, I was able to do these things quickly because we've talked about it. You know, you're going to be asked to make quick decisions as a QB, as a running back, you're going to be asked to make quick decisions. All kinds of things have to happen instantly, and it has to be what I call unconscious competence. You have to do it without thinking about it. Right now, they're doing it, thinking about it a little bit slower pace. But to get into the NFL season as a player, it's got to be automatic. You do it, it just comes. And that's what you're doing right now. You're doing it slowly. But again, as they progress, it's those reps that they get that makes such a difference.
So again, mandatory minicamp going on all this week at Arrowhead Stadium. And then everybody's going to disperse. In fact, next week on Chiefs Live, I'll have a chance to talk with Andy Reid. We're going to kind of try to put all this together and get his review of what has happened essentially since the first of the calendar year up until the end of mandatory minicamp. And again, the NFL, the league that never sleeps, this is coming up on a couple weeks where it finally takes its breath. Everybody kind of shuts down a little bit and then gears back up, of course, for the real thing. But let's take this thing kind of down the line here and offensively a little bit with, and we've talked about it throughout the spring and the last couple of weeks on Chiefs Live, of offensively, this is one that scheme is going to be very important. People say, well, it's always important in football. Yeah, but sometimes when you've got Megatron,
right,
you can throw in the ball, just file it up there and let him go get it. This is an offense, it seems like. And with this personnel and offense, how important will scheme and the execution of that scheme precisely be for the success of this team?
Well, you know what? It's going to fall on the shoulders of that guy right there, Mr. Smith, in terms of making the quick decisions. When you look at this offense, it really hinges, I think, on the QB recognizing where the coverages are. The NFL is the NBA. It's a one-on-one league. You find the matchups and you exploit the matchups. I think this is what this offense does. When you've got the tight ends that we've had, which I think is so important in this offense and so important to a QB, and you've got the size of receivers we have, couple that with a 1,800-yard back in Jamal Charles, you've got a lot of different weapons. So right now what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to find those matchups. There's a lot for the offense to work with.
Yeah, and talking to Doug Peterson throughout this mandatory minicamp, he was saying exactly that. This is going to have to be a team that finds its best matchup. Sometimes if you're 3 wide, 2 wide, 5 wide, 4 wide, who's your best against their worst? And you go for that matchup, and so that's what the Kansas City Chiefs are going to try to do. And quite honestly, it's the way Andy Reid has made a living in this league for 14 years as the head coach of the Eagles prior to coming to the Chiefs. Okay, let's talk with check in with Andy Reid. He addressed during the mandatory minicamp just this avalanche of information, what's gone on, the pace of how it's going, and get his reaction.
Other than that, it was a good workout here. We got a lot of plays in, a lot of different situations. Good to get the ones versus the ones always, and they challenge each other, and there's some good things, and there's some things we need to work on both sides of the ball, and but overall, very positive. Good work ethic. This football team has a great work ethic. They're really pushing themselves.
What is it that you hope yet to instill with these 2 days left?
Well, keep getting better at the scheme. We've gone back now and started from square one, and then the plays that we put in early, and we're rehashing those one more time, and then we'll get them one more time in training camp. And so it's important that you focus in on the small things. Maybe something that you didn't get the first go-round, you get the second go-round. So,
trying Jeff Allen a little bit at center, trying to show the versatility with that line.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, you need that. I've always done that with the offensive line. Andy Heck's always done that.
So, again, Kansas City right now going through the mandatory minicamp week and then shuts things down to get ready for St. Joe and training camp at the end of July. One thing that's paramount, I think, here is the younger players as they mature who are carried over that have been here the last couple of years and now moving into with this regime and trying to get acclimated to Andy Reid, how he does things on both sides of the ball. But let's talk about some second, third, and fourth-year players that we've watched closely during the OTAs and minicamps that need to emerge. I'm going to start with the offensive line because in watching those guys this week, let's talk with the interior three. We talked about Brandon Albert at tackle or Eric Fisher, the rookie at right tackle. But the three interior guys I want to ask you about, Rodney Hudson at center coming off an injury. We saw some video of Rodney. Mm-hmm. Jeff Allen at left guard, who reps some this week at center. And then John Asamoah, who's a year older, a couple years older, I guess. But their emergence, what has to happen for this team to have a good year? What has to happen with those three guys in specific?
Well, you talk about the main cog to me is Rodney Hudson coming off the injury. You got to make sure, and I had a chance to chat with him just briefly at DJ's fundraiser here recently, and he said things feel good, but he's got to get into the contact and get it going. But he's got the ability. He's a higher round pick, and I think he is the key right now in terms of solidifying the offensive line, because that center position, quite honestly, Ryan Lilch did a great job last year, the Iron Man that stepped in and did it. But Rodney's got to come in, stabilize that. You talked about Jeff Allen taking some reps at center also, because you've got to figure out who that second string center is, because things happen. You've got to have kind of a swing guy who can go all over the place. You know, Jeff Allen right there at 6'5", 315. Kind of tall for a center, but the fact is, you know, his true position is guard. I think even if he had to, he could do some things at tackle. I think he's very, very mobile, and he can get around and do a lot of things. But him, Stevenson, you're looking at that left guard position. Of course, Schwartz is going to play into it. I know he's not the second-year guy that this is our focus. But those guys inside, and along with Asamoah, they have to stabilize things. Because in my mind, when I look at the tackle position is maybe as good as you could have in the NFL right now. So those interior three, they've got to step up, they've got to run block, they've got to stay on their men, they've got to understand assignments, they've got to climb to the second level, get to the linebackers, spring some holes for number 25 so he can do what we've seen him do so well in the past. And then the biggest thing, because it's a pass league and the ball's going to be in the air, is you have to stabilize the interior side of the pocket. Not let people get back, Mitch, any farther than 2 yards, because Alex has to have a chance to step up with confidence and deliver the ball on time where he wants to go. He can't do that if he has people in his face and he can't step up.
It's interesting you mentioned something about mobility of these three guys, because in watching this spring and throughout mandatory minicamp, they're asked to do a lot being mobile, whether it's screens, shifting the pocket, trying to get a chunk play, whether it's Charles or Niall Davis. And you've mentioned how key they are in getting the chunk play, whether it's getting something to Jamal in space or them getting to a second level. Somewhere this team has got to come up with some explosive offensive plays. And without a Andre Johnson necessarily or a Charles Johnson at wide receiver, these guys, Hudson being mobile. We saw it in the middle 2000s with a guy like Wegman. But the mobility of those guys, how does that create explosive plays?
Well, you know what? The fact of the matter is explosive plays. You know, those guys, they're just not blocking up in the front also. I mean, you're going to see swing passes. You're going to see Jamal Charles in the flat on the right side and the left side. Get used to it. You're going to see it a lot, in my opinion. And you're going to see one, maybe two offensive linemen get out there, hopefully, to lead that charge, go down the alley. And they talk about the alley being the numbers right there because now you've got areas to cut to the outside or the inside. Remember Priest Holmes and what he did so well back in my era. So that is huge. You've got to get out there and do those different things. But I think you're going to see kind of when you talk, and you so astutely brought it up in terms of the chunks. In the NFL, you love 12 and 14 play drives, but they can't happen all the time. You've got to have those 3 and 5 play drives that score either 3 points or 7 points. And with that, I think you're going to see that short controlled passing game. But in my mind, number 82 has a chance to break some tackles being as physical he is. And the fact is, he has deceiving speed. He's somebody who can break away and do some good things. It's those chunks, which is going to be huge. I think Dexter McCluster is going to figure into this also because, as I always say, growing up playing not it, he was never it. This is a guy that's a scat back and do a lot of different things. I think they're going to depend on him a lot in the return game also, but he's got some special skills that I think the offensive side of the ball is recognizing.
Well, there you see him on cue. So he's the class of 10 as we segue now to wide receivers. He's in the class of 10. The class of 11 comes up a lot with John Baldwin. And the question is, how do you get consistent productivity out of John Baldwin? You mentioned Bo, his tackle-breaking ability. John now becomes, there's a hot light on John to perform and to step up and make explosive plays and to become a consistent, precise receiver in this offense. And by the way, we're not giving away secrets on swing passes to Jamal Charles. Yeah. Andy Reid did that with Westbrook. Years and years and years. It's part of Andy's deal. And, I mean, he made Westbrook an outstanding all-purpose back in Philadelphia. But let's talk about John Baldwin a little bit and what you want to see, because this is one of those guys in that second-year, third-year, fourth-year range that have to all jump up and be better.
Well, John does have to step up, and who better to bring that out is David Culley, the wide receivers coach who I've talked about. I was with in Pittsburgh for a short time. But when you look at John right there, 6'4", 230, this is a physical specimen. He has all the tools. He catches the ball. He likes to catch the ball with his hands out away from his body, which you love as a receiver. Maybe the most incredible catch I've ever seen got called back on a penalty, but he's got the abilities to make some just crazy great plays. But he's got to be consistent. He's got to run his routes, because in this offense, the QB lots of times is throwing to a spot. And the QB has to trust, Mitch, that receiver to get to that spot. So that's where the exact, precise route running has to happen. He has to gain the confidence, in my opinion, of Alex Smith, that he's going to do what he needs to do when he's supposed to do it. And the fact that if the ball's delivered where it's supposed to be delivered on time, that he's going to come down with it. And after that, he minimum falls for 4 yards with as big as he is, but he's got a chance to do some good things.
I just wish the John Baldwin catch would have been official. Because it would have crashed the YouTube site.
It was amazing.
It would still be up there today. It was unbelievable. Okay, now let's move further back on the second, third year, fourth year. But I'm going to throw a rookie in with the running backs. Because Nile Davis appears to be a very important piece to 2013, the season. But I'm going to throw in some guys that fit this second year, third year, fourth year range. Sean Drone. Last year we saw him do a lot of good things. Cyrus Gray seems to have his confidence back so far this spring and throughout mandatory minicamp into the summer. But those guys, we know what Jamal Charles is. We know what he does. Somebody else, probably, and even Andy Reid alluded to this, there's got to be two others probably to help Jamal out. What about that group of guys? How much can Nile Davis help this team? And then what about the emergence of a Drone or a Cyrus Gray?
Well, it's interesting. We talked about it earlier on some of the matchups. One of the biggest position battles, I think, which is a backup, is, to me, between Drone and Gray and Nile Davis, two of those three are staying. It's hard to imagine all three stay. They could, but you would imagine that Nile's going to be here with as high a pick as he was and some of the intangibles he has. Of course, we talked about it. They're looking at him and returning kicks as well. And he's fast. He can do a lot of different things. But you've got to have somebody to take some of the workload off of Jamal Charles. And that's going to be interesting because those guys – they're not just backup running backs that aren't going to play. They're going to be in there. They're going to get a load. I guarantee you that they do not want to put all the touches on Jamal like they have in the past. That they'd like to keep him a little bit fresher. You'd love in a lot of different times where early in the game where you could come and spell him for a series or at least two or three different plays in that little extra, because Jamal's the guy that you want in the second half to have the ball as much as possible when people wear down, because he's got a chance to break it with that world-class speed. Those backups are very, very important. They've got to be ready to go at the drop of a hat.
And again, these are some guys that can produce explosive plays. You look at Nile Davis. He's already done it this spring and summer. There are times when you see him in a scheme where he's got the ability at 4.37 speed at 228 pounds to create a chunk play out of a play that's not necessarily designed in regular thinking to create a chunk play.
Well, you're right. And those type of guys, like you said, that run a 4.37, they do not grow on trees, especially that size. So he can, in my mind, and we've talked about it, and it's no secret, he's got some issues. He's got to hold on to that ball and make sure, and they've talked about it. But you know what? In my mind, this is a guy that can run away from you, run around you. He has got all the skills. He had a great sophomore year, I believe, and has dealt with a few injuries at Arkansas and certainly some of the upheaval with the coaching situation there. So I think he's got a little bit to prove, probably believes with the type of skills that he has that he can make a bigger difference than maybe some people thought. I don't know that he feels like he has any chip on his shoulder for where he went in the draft, but I feel like this is a guy that probably has a little bit to prove and has the ability to do it.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting to watch, particularly when St. Joe and the pads get back on, because he's also had to rehab from some injuries. The chairman has been here this week, the chairman of the Kansas City Chiefs, Clark Hunt, during mandatory minicamp. When we come back, we're going to check in defensively in that group of guys in that second-year, third-year, fourth-year range that must emerge. They've got to jump to another level. We'll check on that side of the ball and check in with the chairman of the Chiefs when we come back on this edition, the mandatory minicamp edition of Chiefs Live.
Just because it's springtime doesn't mean you have to miss out on football. That's right, there's no off-season for Chiefs fans, and that's why there's a show for those who want to stay close to their favorite team all year long. It's Red and Gold. Red and Gold will take you around town, Arrowhead, and into the lives of players and coaches like no other show. Check local listings for dates and times. It's Red and Gold.
Corona Light presents Kenny Chesney's No Shoes Nation Tour. Starring Kenny Chesney. And Eric Church. Eli Young Band, and introducing Casey Musgraves, Saturday, June 15th at Arrowhead Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Available at all Ticketmaster ticket outlets. Kenny Chesney and friends in concert.
Love the Chiefs? Join us. Stay connected and join the growing communities of the Chiefs Kingdom. There's so many ways. Twitter keeps you up to date on all things Chiefs.
They're not going to catch it. Derek Johnson on a linebacker blitz.
Facebook lets you respond and react to fellow fans. And Instagram takes you inside with some of the best images of the Kingdom. Stay connected to win some sweet prizes. Join in and be a part of your Chiefs 365.
Thanks for joining us on this mandatory minicamp edition of Chiefs Live. I didn't get the word out on kcchiefs.com, but this is mandatory for everybody who follows you and I on Twitter.
This is mandatory.
This is mandatory.
This is all mandatory.
Ken and I are just going to hang out here for the rest of the summer. So if you want to send, you know, food, gifts, whatever, we're just going to be here till we leave for St. Joe.
It's all welcome.
It's pretty cool here on this edition of Chiefs Live. Mitch Holtz with you along with Kendall Gammon. Let's carry over now. Before the break, we kind of talked about the second, third year, and fourth year guys that need to emerge on the offensive side of the ball. And let's go front to back now defensively. To me, in this category of discussion, in jumping up another level, other than wide receiver, this is the position on the field with this team where this category has got to leap, not step, leap on the defensive front. Tyson Jackson, Dontari Poe, Alan Bailey, Mike DeVito notwithstanding because he was brought in as a free agent. But you catch my drift here. Those guys have to leap forward. What do you want to see from these guys from the defensive front for Bob Sutton's defense to be impactful?
Well, you know what? We've heard a lot about the defense in terms of the attacking style. We've heard and talked about the fact that like a Tyson Jackson may be on the left side, and all of a sudden he may be on the right side. Things like that I like a lot because you're creating some indecision on the offensive side of the ball, namely the offensive lineman. And I remember when you weren't sure who to block or things were coming up and you were a little bit of confusion was created, that was not a good thing. So you talk about Tyson Jackson. I know he's not the second or third year player, but this is a guy who's got to step up, and all indications right now in this these OTAs and into the minicamp is that he is stepping up and doing a nice job. Has batted some balls down. You see the same thing from Dontari Poe. I've said it ad nauseum in terms of the fact that if you give Dontari Poe a place to go and tell him where he needs to be as opposed to the two gap, at 6'3", folks, and 350 pounds, nobody's going to stop him if he wants to get. If he says he's going right there, he's going right there, trust me. So that gives another thing is you can get. If you can get that penetration, you can just disrupt things so much. Now, at 6'3", 6'4", he can put his, 6'5", as I see there, you know, he can put his hands up. He can make a difference also. That's huge. He's knocked some balls down also. You know, Mike DeVito comes in from the Jets, knows the defense already. The Sutton is familiar with him. I like that. We've heard from a lot of different folks that this is a guy that the players really like, identify with. He has a hard work ethic, does some good things. That's not only good on the field, but to me that's good off the field and inside the locker room. That makes, to me, I say it all the time, all the difference in the world. When you've got that type of leadership, I think he's doing a good thing. But there's some other guys, you know, like an Alan Bailey that in my mind have to step up, whether it be to try to challenge for that other defensive end position or on the 4-2 side of things when you're in your nickel or your dime and you've got your rush interior lineman. That's what we've seen him use down mostly in the past, Mitch, and I think he's got to be somebody that has to step up a little bit, but we've talked about it all the time. There's no doubt that management is always looking at other offensive, or rather defensive linemen in the league and see who comes available. Not that they're not happy with what's going on, but I think they're always scanning. Defensive linemen right now in the NFL, in my opinion, are very, very difficult to find.
Yeah, and find good ones that play with a high motor. You mentioned the two passes broken up. It was exciting to see it in the Tuesday practice of mandatory mini camp, where in a sequence of about 5 to 7 snaps, a pass broken up by Tyson Jackson and then one by Dontari Poe. Because the more you can be involved in disrupting a play, you don't have to get a sack to disrupt the play. You don't necessarily have to get a pressure. Stay involved in the play as it goes. Get your hands up, even if you don't have crush the pocket. It was good to see.
And I'm going to jump in with that. You talk about them getting their hands up. This is something that I think, folks, if you don't understand, listen to me on this one in terms of just because you don't knock a pass down, as a defensive line, if you get pressure and you get your hands up, the QB on the other side, he's looking for windows. And what I'm talking about is he's looking for spaces to open up where he can see the wide receivers, the backs out of the backfield, and he can get the ball to them. If you've got those hands up and you've got good timing, you start to close those windows, and that makes it so much more difficult for the quarterback, rather. That's the type of things that I would really like to see.
We're going to jump over the linebackers in this second, third year, fourth year discussion because I want to get to the D-backs. And actually, we're getting with Brandon Flowers, we're getting, I can't imagine, he's been here 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Right.
I mean, this guy's a veteran now. But Dante Robinson comes in. Sean Smith comes in, but Kendrick Lewis, Eric Berry, Jaleel Brown. These are guys that come to mind for Bob Sutton's secondary now, working back there with Emmett Thomas and also with Al Harris. Of that group, what do you want to see to jump forward? I know Eric's been a Pro Bowler for 2 years, but we talked about creating explosive plays on defense. What do you want to see out of these second, third-year, fourth-year guys percolating to jump up to another level?
You know what? With the attacking style, the defense sometimes comes balls that are not where you'd always like to have them as an offensive side when we're pushing things. I want to see balls tipped. I want to see balls in the air. I want to see the ball intercepted and taken away. We've talked about it. That was not done last year with the Chiefs. They know that. You know that. I know that. Yellow Dog knows that. They did not take balls away last year. They've got to do that. They're talking about it. You tip balls. You're into people. It's an attacking style. You make the offense uncomfortable. You know, right there, we started with Donte Robinson. The fact that you're seeing him line up in corner also some on the other side, because when it comes down to it, you've got three great corners in Donte Robinson, B-Dot Flowers, and Sean Smith. Sometimes people go down. Flowers went down a little bit last year. Of those three, two of them are going to play the starting cornerbacks. So you've got to rotate and have them in there. We've seen Smith at the other side also, so you've seen a lot of different things. No position on the Chiefs, in my opinion, has been upgraded more than the defensive backfield. You talked about the safeties. Of course, you have Barry and Lewis from last year, but you've got Sanders Cummings being drafted. They're playing him at the safety position as well. You've just got a lot of different options that you can do. And big physical guys, in my mind, and I understand if people are saying, well, you know, Brandon Flowers isn't as big and physical. No, he maybe he isn't, but he plays physical. He has a nature about him. He has an aura about him. He does a good job. There's a lot of receivers in the league that do not like playing against him.
Yeah, I'm kind of charged about that group back there. And I have seen the rotation you're talking about during this week specifically in mandatory minicamp. We're going to mix and match in there with these guys that can both play right and both play left and move things around. Okay, as we close this mandatory minicamp edition of Chiefs Live, we're going to close out with some comments from the chairman of the Chiefs, Clark Hunt. Now, listen, let's go to the genesis of this whole thing, and it's him. It's him being the chairman representing the Hunt family, the ownership of this team. He moved right away. He did not waste a minute. He went first, second in targeting Andy Reid. We're going to talk about that all throughout the 2013 season. But now we're sitting here in June. The thoughts of Clark Hunt, what he's been seeing so far at minicamp and acting quickly to get Andy Reid in here as head coach, what's he seen?
Oh, well, it's been so exciting this spring to see the guys progress. Just going back to the rookie minicamp, which just seems like it was yesterday, but it was actually about a month ago, and watching the progress that we've made on the field. Even 2 weeks ago, I thought the practice was great, but you move to today in the minicamp that we're in, and you can see the guys are really picking up. You can feel the excitement in the building, not only when the guys are on the practice field, but when they're in the meeting rooms as well.
Clark, you talked after the regular season last year about being more hands-on. Is this part of it? I mean, mini camp starting, we don't usually have the owner here and available, etc.
Well, I am trying to be around the team more. Definitely, that's part of it. But a big part of it is just my excitement as a fan and wanting to see Andy and his staff coaching the team. And it's been so much fun to see Andy out on the field. One of the things that he mentioned to me during our interview back in January was how excited he was to get back to coaching. He'd really worked his way out of coaching and had become a manager with the Eagles, and he wanted to get back on the field working primarily with the offense, and it's been fun to see him do that this year.
Is it more comfortable, quicker? Or I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth about the other guys. But
well, the one thing that I've noticed is how fast-paced the practices are. Andy likes to put a lot on them and expect a lot out of them, and the guys are responding. Some coaches approach that differently. There are a lot of ways to be successful, but that's part of Andy Reid's offense, and frankly also the defense also, is he likes to load them up, has very high expectations of them on a daily basis, and the guys are responding.
You guys go out and get Alex Smith this year. He's going to be an upgraded quarterback. How much of your excitement is at the quarterback position?
One of the things that's easy to do when you're at practice is watch the quarterback position. And I think we have several guys who are going to be able to help us, maybe not only this year but down the road at the quarterback spot. Clearly, Alex is the focus. Watching him lead the team has given me a lot of comfort. Watching him throw the ball is very exciting. He's somebody that has a command of the offense and brings a resume of success to the Kansas City Chiefs.
It's pretty apparent when you look at that and you hear what he says and you hear verbally, but even non-verbally, you can see with Clark Hunt the excitement that he's got, the fact he's tired of losing, Right. Okay, we all are getting beaten around. And what the Andy Reid era can do for this franchise. What do you see?
Well, we'll start with this. You talk about the Andy Reid era, and it goes back to what you mentioned earlier in terms of right after the season, he got started with it. January 7th, Andy Reid is announced as the new head coach, and that era began. And Clark Hunt has been the pivotal role in what's happened this offseason. And I think to a man, people would say, yeah, they've done pretty much everything right this offseason. What I see, it's hard to put into words, but what I see in that interview is a leader of a team who's completely locked in with what's going on, has a great idea of where he's trying to go, and is excited. I see it in his eyes. I see a little wry smile. His expectations, they talked about that, his expectations. I'll tell you what his expectations are. They're to win the whole thing. But he's, as he said, you temper that with the fact that this is the first year of a new regime. But I like that because your only goal should be to get to the prize and win the thing. That's what he wants. I like where he's got things headed. He was on the front of the curve on every situation. He beat everybody to the punch and, to me, made so many right moves this offseason. As a fan, I'm excited. The fact that I get to cover him, I'm excited. This is my team. I'm excited. I guess the theme right there for me was I'm excited. I like what I heard. I like what I'm seeing.
Well, thank you for being with us during mandatory minicamp. Now go back out in your backyard, the rubber tires. You can run through them and do all of your drills as you get ready for St. Joe. We need you ready for that camp in St. Joe. Hit the ground running just like this team. There's going to be no waiting. You're going to get left behind. Just saying. Anyway, thanks for joining us on this edition of the show. He's the snapper, Kendall Gammon. And I'm Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs. Next week, we'll take a little bit different twist. I'll sit down with Andy Reid. We'll also take a look at the preseason schedule for the Kansas City Chiefs with Paul Burmeister, who will be doing the television broadcast for the Chiefs Television Network. For Kendall Gammon, I'm Mitch Holtis. Thanks for joining us.